Welcome to the RC Motorsport Europe podcast.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Hi. We're back.
We are.
We've been to the AGM and we survived to tell the tale and we're here. We're back in the RCTV studio and we had a great time.
Yeah,
it was Brussels.
It was pretty good. There was lots of good discussions, good advancements, and generally, overall, very positive.
Yeah, yeah. And we, amongst many things, we had some good feedback about these podcasts. So, spurred on by that encouragement, we thought, why not do a few more?
Yeah, here's some more.
Here's some more. And, you know, if you found our podcasts as a good way to digest pre-AGM, well, let's do it post AGM.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what happens after when you digest the AGM. What happens afterwards? That's this. This is the AGM digested by us and then passed on to you.
Right. Okay. Should we do some sort of intro?
Yeah. I'll stop all those euphemisms and just hello.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say we're RCTV.
We are. That is true.
We're the official media partner for EFRA.
Yep.
This is Matt.
Hi. And this is Frank.
Oh, thank you.
There
okay.
You go.
Thank you for getting that.
Yes.
One. Okay.
Okay. So the AGM has happened. We've made it back to the UK a little bit tired, but we're here and it's looking very good, very exciting for the years ahead. As we discussed on the last podcast, all the changes, everything is decided in this meeting.
Yeah.
Like everything. Like on a day-to-day basis, EFRA themselves have a very limited power to do anything other than action what is decided in the rule book. And the rule book is the handbook. And so it is literally going through the handbook every year and suggesting rewordings, additions, subtractions, removing things that are obsolete and adding things that are needed and other fundamental changes.
Yeah.
That's how it happens. Nobody within EFRA has the power to wake up one day and go, oh, I think some crazy new rule should happen.
Yeah,
It's not allowed.
And there's no just pushing it through because I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And now we're going to make it a rule. So it doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, and I think we'll even see that because we're going to have a quick look at, we say quick, we're going to have a look at some of the minutes which detail all the changes. And there's times when EFRA have proposed things or people on the board of EFRA have proposed things and the federations have said no.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it's not like EFRA have any way of getting their own way. All they can do is present a good idea and then the federations, your representatives, say yay or nay. But at the same time, your federations have put in proposals as well. And sometimes they've got through and sometimes they've been voted down. Sometimes they've been said, go away and work on it, come back next year with a kind of refined idea.
And so also associate members as well.
Associate members can put forward, they don't get a vote, but they are able to put forward a proposal and then the federations vote on them.
Yeah, and we'll see a couple of proposals that have come through from associate members, but mm-hmm. most of them come through from the federations and suggestions from the EFRA board, who that's made up by the president, secretary, the
section chairman.
And the section chairman, and there's one other position, I can't remember off the top of the advancement position, I can't remember.
Oh yeah, the future motorsports, the other,
yes,
other,
so the other RC sports position.
Yeah, Andreas Lammers, and he's charged with looking at where the sport might be going. Things like crawling,
bikes was a big thing that
is another big one. There's lots of developments that could happen, and it's important to not just be closed in looking at the sections we have, but looking at what might be viable. Drift is another one. I mean, drift happens under IFMA, not currently with EFRA. So yeah, that's the kind of innovations or just the other motorsports and keeping an eye on whether they should become part of EFRA.
Development secretary, I think, is
something like that. Yeah. yeah, that sounds good. And interesting. Yes. A lot of people told us that we got a lot of things wrong on the previous podcast, which is absolutely fine.
We knew we would. Absolutely.
We knew we would. And we were talking about this and going, well, you know, we're going to make more mistakes now.
Yeah.
And But what we could do, and I've literally just had this idea now, but we're going to put a way of contacting us on the screen now. If we get it wrong, let us know here. And what we might do, because this is a series of podcasts, we might do a wrap-up podcast where we do all the corrections in one. That might be the most entertaining podcast of all of them. But yeah, let us know if we get it wrong, and we'll fess up and put it right. So yeah, there you go.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. So, well, we talked about how AGMs work and the whole process that they go through. But what we should do now, because what's different now, is look at the proposals and what got through, what got rejected, and stuff like that. Yeah. So, on here, various things happened, ceremonial things, thanks for who came, who didn't, any correspondence. There was a media presentation, which was awesome. And then then we started with the proposals, and the first one came in, quite a fundamental one, that said only federations who have drivers represented in the current EC are eligible to vote in that section at the AGM, which made sense in some ways, because it was basically a case of, if your federation has no electric touring car drivers, you know, some of these smaller federations, they only have maybe a couple of drivers or maybe 10 drivers, and they all do large-scale off-road, or they all do 1/8 buggy. If your federation has no drivers in electric touring car, then really you shouldn't be voting on the future of electric touring car. That was the idea behind it. But unfortunately, it was the will of the people who attended that it was rejected.
Yeah.
It was seconded by Austria, and then it was rejected fairly convincingly with 12 against and 5 abstentions. So, never mind, we move on.
It might get proposed again next year, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah. I think some of the people who were saying against that proposal were things like, these smaller federations drivers would take part if certain classes of racing took steps in that direction to make them more accessible. So they could be helping to make that section more accessible with their vote. So rather than just it being a kind of turning into an exclusive for the bigger federations who have all the power.
Yeah.
So fair enough. Something else was not seconded here.
One of the sort of big ones. The section chairman communicates the track chosen. Basically, the section chairman has basically a full veto of what if a event proposal has been voted in, and the section chairman decides, well, they're not really up to spec of what we would expect from a European championship. I don't think it should be allowed.
Yeah.
And that, as we can see, not seconded.
Yeah. There was kind of a movement to hand a bit more power or empower the section chairman, a little bit more than has traditionally been the case.
Yeah.
Because, you know, more and more they have pressure on them and they get the blame when things go wrong, but actually find that in practice it's not actually their say, certain things that go wrong. That might be down to the race director or the referee or the organizer or the weather or whatever, and if they can't have overall say but they're getting overall blame, that's kind of not fair. And often when tracks, because we'll tackle a few of these together because they all kind of had the same result, where tracks get chosen fairly democratically or by people voting on events, sometimes you'll find that one federation votes in tandem with a neighbouring federation. They kind of work together and, you know, they just go, well, you know, it's their turn.
So they
can have the event. And what that can do is the section chairman is... they're the one that actually going to go to this event and go, it's going to be really challenging to make this work.
Yeah. And also it should be said that the section chairman actually doesn't get a vote.
So they don't get a vote.
No,
this is true because they're on the EFRA board and the EFRA board don't get, and the board don't get.
So the section chairman kind of just has to deal with whatever the federations have, however they voted. Basically.
Yeah. So they were wanting to go from having literally just, I witnessed kind of making a recommendation in the section meetings where the section chairman would be kind of like, remember what happened last time at that place, or I went to visit this place and it's pretty good, but no power to even have 1% of the decision, because they can't. They wanted to move from that to almost full power.
A total veto, yeah.
And in some ways that would have made their role so pivotal. And then the voting on, because we get we get section chairmen who sit in position for many, many years and are very, very rarely challenged. We witnessed in 23 a vote of non-confidence, but no alternatives. Nobody putting their hat in the ring, nobody stepping up and asking to do it. And very rarely does somebody put their hand up and with a sitting chairman and say, I'd like to have a go. Very rarely has that ever happened. Yeah. And even less, even more rare that they've actually successfully been able to do that. So these chairmen are kind of stuck in position. And in some ways, when you listen to like Ian Oddie sort of said, nobody else wants the position, so I'll do it.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, when it comes to revoting him in, he's like, literally nobody else wants to do this, so I'm doing it. So I got the feeling from some chairmen that they would like this kind of, well, if I'm going to get all the blame, I should be able to have sway to make things happen. And other chairmen were kind of like, I don't really want to have the pressure of deciding the track and then ruling everything that happens at the track.
Yeah.
I'd like to put the trust in the referee, in the race director, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, not even seconded that one.
I think that leads into the next.
So the section chairman one, and then that was ultimately, it was seconded by this increased authority for EFRA chairman at European Championships. So this was the one at the event that gave them the ultimate authority. Switzerland did second it. But an interesting thing is, unless something is seconded, there can be no debate on it. So they, you know, one of these rules will get read out and explained why, and then they'll say, you know, any seconders. And if there's no seconders, it's put to bed immediately.
Yeah.
So you can't even have, but sometimes people will second it so it can be debated.
Mm.
Like in the case of...
That also means it has to go to vote as well, doesn't
it? Well, what happened was...
In this case, it
was seconded by Switzerland. It was discussed at length, and then they decided...
The next day they came
What we're going to do is come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they came back tomorrow with a rewording, which was even less kind of palatable, it seems. Or at least people had had enough time to talk about it overnight and were like, no, it wasn't even seconded.
Yeah.
So there was
zero discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's quite a few of these that went that way.
Because they were all fairly related to each other. Let's see. This one is...
So this one passed unanimously, but this is...
Not related to the previous one.
No.
It's at the base of the stage one report. I can't remember exactly.
So this was to do with having more reports from the track, I believe.
Yes, it's the stage one report is basically the initial information that the proposals that we saw that we went through in one of the previous podcasts are basically that forms the basis of the stage one report.
Yep.
Basically this adds some things to add into the actual stage one report that goes out for the racers. So that's where racers are able, once they know the dates and the locations where they're going to be going to, they can start making their plans basically.
Interestingly, the chairman is entitled to reject applications when information is inadequate or unsatisfactory. What unsatisfactory could mean could be open to interpretation. So it could be that there's a little bit of chairman power in this rule, but this was seconded by Spain and passed unanimously. Yeah. So all of those event proposals that come in that form the basis of the stage one report, they may never see the light of day if the answers to those points are unacceptable. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Such as if there was only one very expensive hotel that was available or something like that.
Yeah.
So this one here is, this was discussed and One of those that it's this one is related to the one previous to the one we just looked at.
Yeah.
About the giving the section chairman quite a bit of power. So this one was withdrawn because the others were not seconded.
Got you. Okay. Cool. This was another one that was
same thing, basically. It's related to
another spin on the same rule, and ultimately that was withdrawn as well. Another one was withdrawn, moved to Sunday morning, and withdrawn. Sometimes they're withdrawn because they are dealt with, or the proposer is satisfied with how it's been dealt with within another proposal, and ultimately nobody wants to have more rules in the book.
Yeah. In this case, the proposer obviously was not satisfied, but
yeah. This was a slight change in how the fees are handled. Grand Prix, the handling fee of a Grand Prix, it isn't a big money change for the racers, as far as I know, but it was seconded by Spain and it was passed unanimously. There was one about refunds, and it was decided and then forgotten last year in the AGM. If only we were making podcasts last year, they would have gone, oh, hang on a minute.
Like large scale.
This was the one where basically it was just an unfortunate copy paster, as we say in the internets, that the current rule was pasted in under the proposal without actually editing it. So if you look at the they're exactly the same wording.
but so in the essence of the proposal,
yes,
was to allow...
The intent of the proposal, yeah.
The intent of the proposal was to allow people from outside of the EFRA block to attend a European Championship if there was space.
Yes.
If all of the spaces weren't sold. And then the amendment, which was finally handled and agreed on the Sunday after much discussion, that there would be... Essentially, the positions would be earmarked for EFRA only.
Yes.
Until the 1st of February. And then after the 1st of February, if there were positions available, they could be offered to outside.
Yes. So it did pass. Not sure why anyone would vote against it, but whatever. So it's fine. But that's an example of an amendment actually, you know, going through and working the way it's, you know, the way it's meant to happen.
This was an interesting one. This is the recognized nationality of a competitor or driver. All EFRA drivers, irrespective of the nationality used for their registration participating in IFMA World Championship or EFRA European Championship, shall retain the identity of their passport in all official documents, meetings, information, etc., prize giving ceremony. So we've seen regularly, not that regularly, but it has happened, particularly this year, where certain drivers fall out with their federation and move to another federation, Paulsen to Poland is one example, and then running under a Polish license in an international event. And then you'll see Jessica Paulsen in the Swedish Euros, organized by her family, in Sweden, in the opening ceremony, holding a Poland banner, which is fine. And
it's just a bit raises some eyebrows, like what?
Yeah, but I think you know, that's just kind of like the front end of the situation where it's like, well, if the passport is Swedish and they're under a Polish license, they should be stood there representing Sweden, even though they got in through the license of Poland. So would continue to get in through the Polish license, but in the opening ceremony and in terms of the results, would be seen as Swedish or whatever country you're from. Killiches are the same with Turkey and Germany, and I think in both scenarios parents are from the other federation area, Turkish father, Polish mother, whatever. Your right is to do whatever, but if your passport is of a certain country, that's the country you represent. You don't represent a federation, you represent a country.
Yeah,
which is interesting, because you know, if AMSHI give you a license and you go and race for AMSHI, they're one of the federations you will see wearing AMSHI clothing on finals day or in the opening ceremony or in the prize ceremony, not their sponsored t-shirts.
So
can you get an AMSHI license if you're from the UK and you've fallen out with the BRCA or whatever, and then will you wear an AMSHI t-shirt if you're there
yeah,
with it?
Yeah,
I don't know, but it's one of them. And it was passed with 16-4-1 against and one abstention. This was the large scale one, which passed unanimously.
This was one of those that it just seemed to like, and it makes sense, especially with the large scale world championships in Australia being cancelled. Because I think they literally had single digit entries or something like that.
And it's basically happened with the likes of Callum Gunn coming to race the Euros anyway.
Which is large scale off road.
Yeah, but this is rolling it into
this
on-road as well.
This opens it up to on-road, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, if there's not an on-road Worlds, then they can come. But they still have that 1st of February date.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same. So it's now in there for large-scale on-road and off-road, but it was kind of put in by Nomac for all classes. But anyway, I think, again, if I'm wrong on that,
we had that
1st of February argument that went back and forth, and that was for all classes.
Well, that was the amendment. This kind of shows. I mean, Ian Audie's been on the EFRA board for a while. He knows how to write a proposal, so he wrote that EFRA members federations take priority up to the 1st of February prior to the event. He wrote that into the proposal.
Yeah, from but the start. This is for people outside of the EFRA block can enter the Euros after the 1st of February. Was that not the same for the other one?
That was for... I can't remember. For IFMAR as well?
This one, National Federation can grant any EFRA registration to a foreign person belonging to a country not yet represented in EFRA or any other country belonging to another IFMAR block. This can also be done by the EFRA board in exceptional circumstances. Also, it's a slight difference, but make it possible when the list is not full for an EC as possible for drivers from IFMAR block. We see it already done in large-scale off-road. So it is the same. It is the same movement that large-scale off-road has gone, let's do it in on-road as well. But then this proposal has said, let's do it in all classes.
I think the wording is important, though. It says a national federation can grant. Doesn't say must grant. So... I think someone brought up the point of, what if some hotshot racer, what if Spencer Rifkin wants to race, world champion in two-wheel drive buggy, wants to race in a EFRA Euros?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's not full, but then you have to start putting in the process of going, but somebody from... another country who's not as famous also that's outside of EFRA also is it first come first serve, or is it whoever's geographically closest, or what?
I don't know,
if there's one spare place available.
If that does happen, and imagine Spencer Rifkin or someone else, or Dakota Fend or somebody comes over and just like runs rampant and ends up on the podium or something like that.
Yeah.
Even, there will be a proposal that says only, if you're in the top 30 ranking of your national...
Be Euro style.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
That something like that will get proposed by somebody.
Yep, yeah.
But it's one of those that it kind of has to happen. Maybe it has to happen first before there's a rule against it. There's one more.
It's one about
5-2-1, I think.
Before this?
Yeah.
6-2-1?
No, one more up. 5-2-1.
What's this one?
This was the... Drivers. At the moment, the way the EFRA rules are is that if you are, say, racing for the BRCA, you're a British racer, you must pit with the all the other British racers.
Yeah.
Even if you race for XYZ brand new brand and you're the only representative of that brand and the only other people who are racing that brand are from
Slovakia.
Finland or or Slovakia or something like that. Well, you're not, unless your pits are literally allocated by the race organizer to be next to whatever team, whatever country your rest of your teammates are, you're literally not allowed to race a pit next to them.
Yeah.
And this proposal,
which would put you at a severe disadvantage, not sitting near your teammates, being able to pass information easily. Yeah.
And as one of the guys, one of the delegates who was there is a racer. Obviously, I mean, these are all racers, but an active racer. And he said, I had to pit so far away from my teammates for an entire week. And they're not just my teammates, they're my friends. So, you know, you're not sitting down with them and wrenching. You're not having a laugh. You're not going, hey, what did you think about this thing? Maybe you're not even speaking in the same area where people speak your native language.
Mm.
That makes it a very difficult and very importantly unenjoyable week-long struggle to do any sort of result at all. So
look how close it was
a big one. Yeah it's
this is how serious that some of the federations were about causing people to pit and represent their country. Like, people want you to represent your country, not your racing brand.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the experience of the racer, they need to have a good time. And, and does that mean sitting in their country or does that mean sitting with their teammates?
And you know, you might think, oh, it's a European Championships, you know, just knuckle down. But, you know, these people are sat there for up to a week at a time. And, you know, if you have a miserable time, you're just not going to want to bother going to the next Euros.
Yeah. So.
It is a consideration, but you know, as Dan points out in his last line of his remarks, in fact, during several ECs in the recent past, this part of the rules was ignored in any case.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and who's going to go and police? You know, like, oh, you 10 drivers, you're not allowed to pit here. Yeah. You need to pick up all your tens of squares of meters of equipment and everything, and just move.
Yeah. Who's because this is Poland.
Yeah.
This table is Poland.
Yeah.
You need to leave.
Yeah.
And go to your own table, which is, you know,
France. And to me, you know, from my experience walking through the pits, you see all the country flags lining the track. You see everyone, you know, walking through during the opening ceremonies. And in many cases, like we said on finals day, a lot of them wearing their national federation T-shirts anyway. So you know what countries are from. It's not that big a deal, I think, but obviously very not massively debated, but obviously 7 against when an 8-4. So
yeah, and the 2 abstentions. I mean, the countries are going to do, arguably you do better sitting with your team.
Yeah.
And so those countries who are diluted by people not sitting in a country probably will get better results for their country by letting their driver sit with other drivers who may be from a different country who are going to share information. And this is the other interesting thing is, yeah, sorry, but when a brand turns up at a Euros, the brand is working together.
Yeah.
Which in many ways is quite good that they don't go, well, I'm from France and you're from Germany, so I'm not talking to you. They're like, no, I'm from France, you're from Germany, and we're in this together.
Yeah.
We need to get the best result.
You run the same engine, I run the same engine. So we need,
that's one of the things about, you know, the true spirit of the sport is working together.
Yeah.
And of course, at the end of the day, we're all racing to win as individuals representing our nation. And I guess the main argument is, are you representing your nation or are you representing your brand? And I guess it's a bit of both.
Yeah,
but you'll tend to be born with your nation, so you know that kind of comes with that's there anyway.
Yeah, imagine if they did like a cultural exchange thing like we've seen at some of the other events that we've covered.
You know
the German team, you know, you have 30 minutes, you have to exchange
recipes.
Here's some sort of food that you just bought at the airport, and here's a piece of traditional headwear.
Yeah, put it in the proposal for next year.
Exactly.
We're not allowed to put a proposal
in. Here's some Dutch clogs, and here's a Bavarian hat with the feather.
Yeah. Yeah. Next proposal, and there's not many left, and obviously this podcast is just about the general rules.
This episode of the podcast.
This episode of the podcast, yeah. And this was the one about information.
Stage two
report. Because many times we get to like a month before the event and we're kind of scraping around for information to pass to... You know, to pass to the racers, and we've just got that old stage one report that didn't come out last year. It came out the year before as part of their proposal to get this thing 2 years ago. So and you know, to be fair, not all clubs are like this. Some clubs are building like amazing websites and presentations and cool stuff, but they just need to format all that information in a standardized way and present it to EFRA so it can be distributed in the same format as all of the other events.
Yeah.
But it's not going to stop you or any organization running an event from making a cool website and brochure and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You just got to share the information in a kind of prompt way.
Yeah.
And stage two report must be introduced into the rules. So seconded by Spain.
What it's done is basically it's codified that all organizers must provide a stage two report.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically it. So it's obviously it was one of those that's just fairly obvious, passed unanimously.
Yeah, and that's going to make our life a lot easier, Frank.
Yes.
A hell of a lot easier.
Yeah.
This is about traveling costs.
This one was another one. So basically, previously they had a 100 euro maximum spend per day for hotels, meals, sundries, etc. Per 24
day?
Hours. Yeah, 100 maximum 100 euros or equivalent. Higher costs will be the responsibility of the referee. So they basically bumped that to 130.
Fair enough.
And basically the remark is that hotels and restaurants are more expensive.
So yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Indeed. Again, they are.
Passed unanimously.
And it's nice to see, nobody argued with that because everyone's paying to go to these events and finding that it's quite painful in some cases. Then this is... there's a running theme of these, a bit of a clear up.
Yeah. So this is the next, there's a few coming up that are basically just tidying up the rules, removing redundant rules, removing very old rules. And there's actually some, I think there's one about rollover antennas in the electric section as well.
Yeah.
Very old stuff. This one is...
So that first one was about radio interference, which doesn't tend to happen anymore, or doesn't happen anymore. Registering your transponder. Oh, no, registering your frequency?
License numbers. Oh, okay. Oh. So when often what happens, Carlos explained this, I remember, in the remarks.
Oh, Trackside. Yeah, website.
Yeah, so basically they have to provide the National Federation number ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of when they get to the track.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just, you know, are they actually people registered?
Yeah.
And so basically to participate in a Euros, you have to be a member of your national federation. And in many cases ranked high enough for you to take someone else's place, you know, because they're not going to send like Joe Schmo, who's only been racing 1 year. They're going to send their best.
Yeah. Cool. Then... We had another one that was passed unanimously. No longer license or frequencies.
Yes. So this is another tidying up of removing the reference to frequencies and saying that you need to provide your personal transponder information.
Yep.
Because the timekeeper has to put that in.
Spare transmitters must have crystals.
Yes. Imagine, I mean, anybody who's been racing for what? More than 20 years or so, you'll remember the days of needing crystals and whatnot.
Just like a bunch of, well, there'd just be a bunch of pegs on a board.
Yeah, yeah. Clothespins or PVC pipes with numbers, number stickers on them. Yeah, all the old school stuff. 865 is about the transmitter impound. Way old. How old is that?
Yeah.
So that's another one. Again, just passed unanimously. No brainer. This one had a lot of debate. A lot of debate.
Yeah.
Because I had actually forgotten about the Ronafalk situation in Sicily, but we also had the Balestre situation in Italy. Well, also in Italy.
Both in Italy, yeah.
So this one a lot of people, and we saw this in the comments on Facebook as well.
Yeah.
People say, oh, what's the big deal about just adding tapping a number every time, you know, you see the car come across for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And what happens if it happens again to another driver?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was a lot of debate about this one. And the debate happened because the proposal was seconded, as you can see. So it was proposed by the Italian Federation, AMSCI, and then seconded by, I can't remember what they're called.
Netherlands.
By the Netherlands.
NOMAC.
NOMAC, that's it. And then, so there was a lot of debate about it.
It went round and round, and what you find is these things go down a certain road and they'll start to think about maybe a slight rewording and will that work with people? And they talk about the rewording and then people go, no. And then it is fascinating to be there and see all of the like different views that you never thought of.
Yeah.
And like, you know, some were arguing there's no need for this. Because you just say the timekeeper should do their best to count the laps of a driver. If they can't, they can't. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, we don't need another rule. Just they'll do their best. And if they can't, then they won't. And then that'll be how it is. But then for me, that seemed a bit like that does put pressure on the timekeeper because it's like, why couldn't you?
Yeah.
And the point was made, like, you know, well, if it's in Italy or if it's in the UK, if it's say it's in Britain and a British driver is winning and you know.
And their transponder stops working, then of course the British timekeeper is going to try and keep it. But if it's, you know, a Greek racer, they'll be like, no, I can't quite reach
the keyboard. And no one's saying that any timekeeper is going to do that, but if you are just told a rule that's, do your best.
Yeah.
Then you couldn't count the driver of any nation or any popularity or fame, the fingers could be pointed at you. So if you were told you're not allowed to, that it isn't your problem, you shouldn't be counting, you should, you know, which I think the essence of this, but ultimately it was just withdrawn because I think this is the good example of go away, figure it out, come back next year.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, which, like...
I think the debate was actually, Jackie, the president was, you know, she's chairing the meeting, basically. Mm. So, and she brought up the point, look, we've been discussing this for 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It was going back for that long.
Yeah.
And basically said, look, you know, and I think she agreed, but she has no vote.
Mm.
I think she agrees. Say, look, you know, if you know, part of your engine breaks, whose fault is that? That's the driver, isn't it?
Yeah.
And other people have brought it up, and that was brought up in the comments as well about this. You know, if part of your car breaks, well, that's your fault, isn't it? Or that's your problem. It's not the timekeeper's problem.
Yeah.
But you know, but basically, I think this is going to be rewritten so it's absolutely just rock solid in perfect English. And explained with lots more remarks.
Yeah, and also,
so that, you know, it can be properly debated.
Actually, is this the one that Mark Rumble was saying?
Yes,
I can go away now. Like I can reword this now, and they were like, time. This was Sunday.
Yes, yeah.
This is like the second day.
This was one of the ones. I mean, we've gone into basically the general meeting proposals are they're gone through up until about like 12:30 and then there's a break for lunch and then all the section meetings start. But before then, everything's handled on the Saturday. Anything left is handled on the Sunday. And this was the Sunday.
Yeah. So this is time's ticking. And also they retake who's here still on Sunday because people have to leave.
There's so literally people already gone.
The voting numbers change, like what creates a majority anymore.
Mm, yeah.
So there was an eagerness to have another stab at rewording it and getting it passed, but I think time got in the way. Ironically, cause it's about timekeepers, got in the way, and it was kind of like, no, bring it back next year. But there was a sentiment from a lot of federations of, let's hope this doesn't happen in 26 because this will be on us now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's taken very seriously.
And someone made that point as well. It's like, if this isn't sorted now,
we'll be back here.
Yeah, going, and why it happens again at €2.
Yeah,
there's going to be some questions to answer.
So, drawing towards the end. Ah, so we had... Oh, no, this is... What's this one?
This one was an interesting one because it wasn't codified as well of just like how many trophies the organizer was supposed to provide.
Yeah.
Because the organizer is paid back by EFRA some amount. I can't remember exactly, but they also have to organize the trophies. They have to organize the marching band, if they have a marching band or whatever, you know, for the opening ceremony. They have to organize all that. Someone has to pay for that.
Yeah.
So yes, this basically codifies exactly the minimum number of trophies that are supposed to be applied. And because we've seen this in some where it's all the top A's and then just the B winner.
Yeah.
But in some of them, it's every single final has the top three trophy. Yeah. And so, yeah, it just basically puts it in the rules.
So now it's all A finalist drivers will get a trophy, mm-hmm. and the top three drivers in the B final.
And the winners.
And the winners of all the other finals.
Yeah.
So there you go.
They'll know ahead of time how many finals they're going to end up having. So they don't, at most, they're going to maybe not give away two or three trophies, depending on how many
So what is the B final in terms of a Nitro event? I'm not sure. Oh, I get it in electric. Like if you're now third place in the C final, you're getting a trophy. No, you're not. Sorry. Well, you might get a trophy. But if you're third place in the B final, you are getting a trophy.
Well, I know at the eighth IC track, mm-hmm. it was literally just the top 10 got trophies. And the top junior and the top female racers,
yeah.
which we'll come to in a moment as well.
Yep.
And that was it. So just top 10.
Okay. And that was past... 13-4 and one abstention, which shows you that there was only 14 federations left at this point. You'll see that, you know, there's none against here. And on the Saturday, there were higher numbers here, and that's why.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one. It's one of them where, and actually you can see from the abstentions, it's one that people aren't necessarily comfortable with what the best thing to do is. Like, so sometimes rules are there with good intentions. And I remember when this was discussed, it's a relatively new rule, but
last year.
I remember being in the section, the electric section, and Jessica Powelson was there. Basically the rule is the best female driver will also receive an EFRA award. That could be that they're in somewhere in the A final, they could be somewhere in the D final, but they get an award because they're the top ranking female driver of the event.
Yeah.
And it was said because Jessica was the only female in that meeting, like, what's your view on it? I didn't seem to have it was like, well, yeah, there should be some recognition, but also it's not that easy. Like, in some ways it could be like a kind of a sympathy,
like a token trophy.
It could be a bit condescending. And in this day and age, people don't really know what to do for the best.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
where we're at now is it's been removed, with 10 in favor of removing it and 5 abstentions, which shows you that 5 federations were just not sure what's best to do on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, Daniel's point was that gender doesn't really have a place in this as we race as one. So yeah, don't know. Could be, probably, not sure. The rest of the rules are pretty like standard. We had chairman. So yeah, the next AGM is going to be in Alicante. That's nice for everyone who's going to be going to Spain. The chairman, a lot of chairmen were re-elected.
No one stood against them.
No one stood against anyone. Yeah. Nobody successfully managed to step down apart from Willie, who's no longer EFRA General Secretary. He's now IFMAR liaison.
He's almost escaped.
He's almost escaped. But after 18 years of service.
Yeah.
And Willie is an absolute legend. I don't think we would be here. Like, I mean, we would be alive. He didn't save our lives. But I don't think we would be doing this role, or that EFRA would have this level of media or PR or service if it wasn't for Willie. I'd pretty sure we'd probably be filming football somewhere or something, but we've been doing this for 18 years, and Willie's been in place for 18 years. So make of that what you will. But no, we started doing this officially for EFRA in 2010. Anyway, I digress. Mark Rumble.
Yeah, but also before that, before we get to Mark, who definitely have to talk about, but Paul Worsley has, there was a vice chairman to help out Paul.
Yes.
Was voted in.
Yep.
Gregor Landon.
Who is a Swedish parent, racer, and I believe parent of racer. So he's got a lot of experience in electric off-road. Must be if Paul knows him. So yeah, that's cool. He's got a right-hand person to help him.
And so does Dan Jones, who has got AMSHI representative Vito Garacci from Sicily. He's got him as his right-hand man. So
yeah, and Vito, that's awesome. Because we had more Euros in Italy last year than any other country. We spent a lot of time in Italy, which is Frank's favorite place to be. And Vito was there, and he was very much the solutions guy.
Yes.
Like, he got us out of so many issues. So we're a huge fan of Vito. Congratulations, and thank you to Vito for stepping up into that role. So yeah, Willie doesn't get to escape. He is IFMA liaison, and he's also kind of supporting Mark in the transition to Mark becoming the secretary.
Mark Rumble from the UK.
Yes.
Well, I mean, from Great Britain, as you can see that, is the new EFRA secretary.
Yeah, and so yeah, he's been in position for just a few days, and already I can tell you he's been making some like modern changes and really cool ones as well. So
very much looking forward to seeing what Mark does and accomplishes, and how much more he can help us out.
Absolutely.
To bring you, you know, great stuff like these podcasts.
I've asked Mark to join us on one of these podcasts to talk to us about his vision for the future. He's not the president, he's the secretary, but weirdly, and we'll get into the secretary's role when we have him on the podcast, but the secretary is as integral as the president, like on a day-to-day basis, more, I would say, more involved than the president.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is a huge role that he's, and huge, huge shoes that he's stepping into, but we're all very confident of what he can do. Jackie remains as president, but was already in post, so that wasn't even up for grabs anyway. Jackie continues the term of presidency, but will be interim treasurer as well now.
I think the point was made that bringing in, basically you can see that Guillaume Livre from the French Federation, FFVRC, will assist Jackie during the year, but they wanted to bring him in as well, but having two brand new people on the board was probably a little bit too much. So
he
will probably be voted in next year then.
Yeah, if it goes well, supporting Jackie, then possibly there'll be a new treasurer in 26. So that's really cool. That's really cool. Then we had the World Championships report, which was great.
That happened. Obviously, we've only done one more. As we're recording this, the all the top name touring car drivers are over in California right now, running the first day of the Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after all of that happens, there is a basically general discussion item. So these aren't proposals. These are just, I would like to formally put this out there to discuss.
Yeah. This is things that can turn into proposals or, as we'll see in a minute, turn into working groups, which are the kind of best way of a proposal happening, is when multiple federations get together in a series of meetings and develop something and then put that proposal through. And you already know that all the federations on board probably are going to vote for it. And they're also probably going to talk to other federations and go, look, we've been doing this work. We think this is a cool idea and we think this is how it should be going forward. And it gets action. That's the idea. We've had some really successful working groups. Things like the new EFRA branding came about through a working group. New media approaches came about through a working group. And they are the way forward. It shouldn't just be a worded proposal every year and it's yay or nay. It should be gradual progress to find the right way, and then it's more chance of it actually getting voted in. However, this first one won't really look into it. It was about different penalties, but Marcus wasn't there at this point, may have had to leave, maybe wasn't even there, and so as there was nobody to talk about this, they just moved on to the next one, which was media coverage.
Yeah. So it was interesting because just on this very first one, because this shows the sort of the dichotomy of these suggestions. If no one's there that knows anything about it, or has any sort of sway or feeling about it whatsoever.
Yeah.
They're just like, well, yeah, I don't know anybody. Okay, we'll just move on to the next one.
Yeah. And also, you know, you have to feel pretty strongly about these things.
Yeah.
When everyone's waiting to go home.
Yes.
To actually hold everyone up to talk about them. Media coverage, that's something that everyone does feel strongly about, including us. And this was proposed by ICAR to have a working group to talk about how the media partner, which is currently us, can work hand in hand with federations to cover international events. And so that was agreed by all. There isn't a vote for these things, but it's kind of, because it's not as formal as that, it's just a suggestion, but there was nobody feeling like they were against. And federations, a handful of federations who are taking their media seriously, obviously ICAR, AMSHI, Portugal are looking into their live streaming as well. But certainly those two federations and us guys and probably the board are going to get together after January and start this working group. And so you may see another proposal around this or series of proposals around this at the next AGM. Could be quite exciting.
Yeah.
So watch this space. And what was this?
This was about a driver that basically laid hands on, I think, one of the race officials at a Spanish national race. And that's a no-no. So he was banned. It wasn't a driver. It was a mechanic of a driver.
Well, they were both banned.
Yes, they were both banned.
Driver was banned for 3 months. Mechanic was banned for six months. Yeah.
But then
in Spain. And in so time, couldn't attend nationals.
There was the Euros. So
the Euro B.
The Euros.
There was the Euro B in that time, which ironically was in Spain. But because that's under EFRA rules and there's no provisions for doing any of this, there was no way to action that ban. Yeah, it was proposed or wanted to be discussed that there'd be some kind of database of licenses and international bans, even though this was national, but just under a different rule book, so not able to be actioned.
Interestingly, we did have an Italian driver who was banned by AMSHI.
We did.
And that driver did not attend the
Euros. Euros in France.
Or in Italy.
Huh.
So, yeah.
But maybe because it was a driver, it was more clean cut. But this is mechanics.
Possibly, yeah.
Because mechanics have licenses within ICAR and some other federations, and there isn't a mechanics license within EFRA, so there's no grounds to do anything. So maybe that's what it was. But Alessio Mazzeo was not with us for some of the Euros, which was a shame. But it's what it is.
So, and then there's any other business, which surprisingly, there was no other business.
We thought there was going to be some other business.
We thought there was going to be some,
There was going to be some other business.
Some little popcorn munching, but no, that didn't happen. And then basically...
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. So the meeting is then officially closed after being officially opened at the morning of the previous day. And then the minutes, which we're looking at right now, are reviewed by two or three people. And then approved and then saved into PDF form and put online. So you can read all these online and follow along as we try to wade through them.
Yeah. So you can read them whilst listening or watching this podcast.
Yeah.
Like
in
go,
school.
And
just
go,
read along.
How are they getting this information? Can they not read? and to that end, you can let us know if we've got any of this wrong. We're doing this on behalf of EFRA as their media partner, but we're RC Racing TV. So if we've got anything wrong, then shout at rcracingtv.com.
The big letters that are appearing on the screen right now, apparently.
Yeah. Shout at rcracingtv.com if we got it wrong, and we'll make a correctional podcast for you to all enjoy. But for now, look out for the other podcasts where we're going to do probably a quicker one on all the other sections, talking about their section meetings and their proposals. So look out for them. And in the meantime, we'll see you soon.
All right.
Check out efra.ws for more info about RC Motorsport in Europe.